Welcome to Simple Living Works. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to present part of Tony and Shane Uncut, the complete dialogue in 8 episodes between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne on simpler living and global justice, which became the DVD Simply Enough, reissued recently by World Vision Canada as Choose Justice. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, and comprehensive lifestyle. Our mission is to equip people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. To learn more about us, listen to episodes 1 and 2. In this episode, I present one of the 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut, a conversation between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne. To learn how this powerful dialogue came to be, listen to episode number 3 called The Saga of Simply Enough. The link is in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Our hope is that you will be so motivated by this series that you will want to share the message with others in your congregation or group. Order a copy of the DVD Choose Justice with this extensive discussion guide from the store at thesimpleway.org for only $10. It is also available from World Vision Canada and from Tony Campolo's store. All those addresses are given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. See pictures of Alternative's crew in Philadelphia producing the original and links to the bonus segments. Links are in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. To get better acquainted with Tony and Shane and their ministries, follow the links in the show notes.
I'm not anywhere near the lifestyle that I think total abandonment to Christ in the Franciscan style would require. Mm-hmm. But when I sign books, I always sign Philippians 3, 13 and 14. Not as though I've already attained, not as though I've already apprehended, but forgetting those things which are behind, I'm still pressing towards the mark of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus our Lord. And Paul did not try to beat up on himself because he wasn't all that he should be. But he did beat up on himself if he didn't feel like he was pressing in that direction. Yeah. He was moving in that direction. And I think that the Christian lifestyle does say, hey, I've been seduced by the dominant culture, and the time has come.
Yeah.
For me to say, here's the Christian lifestyle over here. It's a life of simplicity. Mm-hmm. It's a life that is responsible to others. It's a life that is responsible to the environment. Mm-hmm. It's a life that takes Jesus seriously. Mm-hmm. And I need to move in that direction. And I'm not going to get there every day. You know, everybody's singing these new hymns, these new songs. You know, I'm an old guy. If I get to heaven and they have an overhead projector, I'm checking out. I need to say that right up front. Because I like the old hymns. And there's this great hymn, I'm pressing on the upward way. New heights I'm gaining every day. I'm pressing on to higher ground. And I think that all of us as Christians need to be unpackaging the lifestyle that the culture has prescribed for us and look for ways to come closer and closer to the kind of responsible lifestyles that Jesus calls us to live.
Yeah, and for me, it's been this journey of figuring that out. And I'm not about to tell everybody they gotta do exactly like we are. You know, I think it's hard enough for me to get the log out of my own eye. You know, before I pick at someone else's speck. And that for me has been about living in community, because I think community is surrounding ourselves with people who look like the person we want to become, you know, and people that look like Jesus to us.
So it's interesting, just to go back to that travel thing where you got, that was a neat idea to get people to pledge to become fasters on energy use in order to support your, my way of handling the same thing, because I feel guilty about that too.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about the poor, you're talking about the needy, you're talking about the environment, and you just flew here, you know, in a jet that polluted the air more than 50 automobiles would do in a year. And you say, gee, what am I doing? I haven't solved the problem, but I do this. If you look at my speaking itinerary, whenever I go anyplace, I try to line up about 5 or 6 engagements in that one location, rather than here, there, here, there. I try to go one place. If I'm in Southern California, how many things can I do in Southern California so that I don't have to, in fact, do that? So there are places between what you're doing, which is pretty difficult to do, because you've got a platform in which you can call upon people to raise their hands and do that, and where I am, and then, but we do have to be more responsible, don't we?
We do, and I think that there, to seeing ourselves on this continuum of radicalism is really important, because I love that we are partners, and we've been, you know, doing this together for so long, and to some people, what I'm doing might look radical, but I can show them. My buddy, Will Braun at G's Magazine, they had this thing called the Demotorized Campaign. So I went to speak at a festival, and Will's speaking, right? So I fly in, and I get there, and I'm camping out. You know, I'm thinking, feeling pretty good about things. And then he comes, and he's just got these red marks down his face. And I'm like, "Hi, are you doing okay?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm doing great. I just biked here. It's about 1,000 miles. So I'm just like, whoa. But I think, like, we, especially ourselves.
And the other side of the story is, you biked out to this interview. How far did you have to bike this morning?
Yeah, it's like 30 miles.
Yeah, that's great.
But I think
I am 72 years old. 30 miles would kill me, number one. Number two is I don't know how many years I have left. I mean, I feel that time. And so you got to realize that the simple lifestyle does require time. Jesus, on the other hand, never felt rushed, did he?
Right.
He always kind of, I always feel judged when I look at the life of Jesus. Because, as my wife says, Jesus went about doing good. You just go about. But there's a time factor, and it does take time to live the life that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I have friends that do that by, you know, they're committed to getting all of their food that's from, we call it rescued food, you know, that's out of the dumpster, that's getting thrown out from stores. And so they, I would say we get about half of our food that's rescued. So you come to a potluck and it has vegetarian, vegan, and rescued, you know. Yeah. But there are people that's part of what they do, is they go around and they get things that are being discarded. And I think there's a place for that, you know, in trying to take things that are being in this disposable society and redeeming them and using them to make good meals or to make clothes or to, you know, like we use tires to make planters in our garden and things like that, you know.
And not to plug your book, but let me plug your book. you have a book out, The Irresistible Revolution. Everywhere I go in the world these days, people are talking about that book. And one of the interesting things is on our board for our mission organization, the Evangelical Association for the Promotion of Education, do all kinds of stuff around the world in the inner city. On our board, there's a really fine Roman Catholic guy. I don't know whether you've met him yet, Lou Fisher. But he's a wonderful. His shift... He was a big time industrialist with huge amounts of money, and his son went as a priest down to Central America, and so he wanted to visit his son. So he flew down there, stayed at the hotel, left the hotel to go and meet his son, and he turned the wrong way, and he ended up in this barrio of poverty that staggered his imagination. And it radicalized him. And he immediately began to give away what he had and spending his time and energy. He lives like I do. He has a car and he drives. But, for instance, he belongs to an inner-city Catholic church. And what he does is spends almost all of his time going around to suburban Catholic churches and suburban priests and saying to them, "What are you doing for the poor of the inner city?" I mean, they're closing down Catholic schools in the city where the public school system is a disaster and these schools are really needed. Could your church begin to share its resources with these struggling inner city parishes? You're living up in the Kensington area. You know that there are Catholic priests up there, and we're both evangelical Protestants, you know. But we've sensed that there's something that those people have caught on to that we need to learn from. And you see these priests trying to minister to these poor families in the inner city, and it's like a third world situation. And 10 miles away in the suburbs is a suburban church which more money than they know what to do with. They build buildings like they, you know, like who needs them? Mm-hmm. And when are we going to not only individually, but as churches begin to say, we have more than enough. When are we, the church that has more than enough, going to start responding to those in the inner city, those inner city churches? I think that every rich suburban church has a responsibility to share its resources that are collective resources with those in the inner city. You know, I got to tell you a couple of stories. One is I love is Clarence Jordan, who used to be down there in Americus, Georgia, with Koinonia Farms, was once taken on a tour of the Great Riverside Church, and somebody pointed it at this cross up front. And Riverside Church is a wonderful church that does all kinds of wonderful things. It's not a put down Riverside, although a little bit it might be. And pointed to this golden cross and talked about the fact that they had just purchased that cross, and some family had given $100,000 for that cross. And Clarence said, $100,000 for that cross? Shucks. Time was you could get one for free. You know, you know, there's lies like that. And those of us who are in the preaching business, you know, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you do with the money that comes to you from preaching. But Søren Kierkegaard has this wonderful little vignette in which he says, it's one thing for a man to love humanity, to love the poor and the oppressed with such an intensity that he is willing to sacrifice everything, even die on a cross, to express that love for humanity. It's quite another to expect to earn $100,000 a year describing the man on the cross. And those of us who are in the business of preaching have a problem on our hands. Because you can make a lot of money talking about the poor.
Or simplicity.
Yes, that's right. You can make a lot of money writing books like The Irresistible Revolution. I don't know, it must be up to about 100,000 copies out there now. Is it at least that?
I think it's around there.
Yeah, it's selling. Congratulations. I mean, I'm lucky if my books get a 20,000 mark. It says that the servant is not greater than the master. In this case, you are.
Well, it also says that we should beware if people say good things about us.
That book, The Irresistible Revolution, which describes the simple lifestyle that you have adopted and how you got into it and the forces that drove you into it, that book is now being used, and my Catholic friend that I was telling you about said that the Jesuit community now, all across this area, are going to be reading this book and discussing it. So not only have you learned from the Catholics, but the Catholics are learning from you. So I thank God for that. Thank God for that. But tell me about the money we make in speaking, because I make a lot of money, you make a lot of money in speaking. What do you do with it?
Well, boy, I think we definitely have to be creative, because one of the early Christians said the gospel which was freely given should never be sold.
Yep.
And I think that we see a lot of selling of the gospel and marketing of the gospel. And so for me, I think that as a community, we've kind of come together and thought about that. All of the money that I get from speaking, first of all, goes to the Simple Way. And we figure out what to do with it. And a few things that we've done we've seen... in our neighborhood, a lot of the kids end up going into the military because they don't see any other financial options. So one of the things I'm really excited about is right now we're forming an alternative to military scholarship where we'll be able to begin helping kids find other ways to go to college, because the military selectively recruits in poor neighborhoods, and they come through with a big kind of circus blow-up doll that's all in camouflage fatigues, and they hand out flyers that say, they told you to go to college, they just didn't tell you how. Now you know, join the Army. You know, and it's just heart-wrenching to think that there, and I know so many progressive folks that are just against the war that haven't done the thinking to try to think, well, we have a responsibility if we're going to say don't go in the military to figure out how kids are going to go to college, how folks are going to have alternatives that you know, we have had and things like that. So we're trying to get at that. One of the other creative things that we've been able to start in our neighborhood.
How does this work? I mean, goes into a fund? Or?
Yeah, and we will take applications from folks that are coming off of, have this sort of spiritual collision, either as people within the military or are thinking of going into the military, that they will apply for this. And we're thinking of just doing one scholarship well. Yeah. And then hopefully other communities and congregations will start to do that too. And to come alongside folks and to share these stories, because there are so many kids that visit us now that have come out of the military or have gone AWOL or deserted the military and just feel this deep, deep collision in their inside themselves, you know, it's like trying to love their enemy but trying to, you know, be a good American soldier and that sort of thing. So
yeah, that's a painful reality. One of the things that I was driving at, I've been with you at least on one occasion, where, you know, you got a pretty good honorarium. Some of the things you do are pretty big gatherings, you know, big Jesus festivals, and they give you like thousands of dollars. And I know that I've been with you on a couple occasions where you just have reduced that money to $10 or $5 bills. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, so one of the things that I started thinking about is there is this temptation to do great things with this all the money that we can make, you know, turn the stones into bread and, you know, or whatever. And I think that's
my approach. Go ahead. Yeah.
Give scholarships to all the kids in our neighborhood. So we're trying to figure out how to balance it out. But I think a part of what I've decided too is I believe in, as Mother Teresa said, in doing small things with great love and not just trying to do great things. And so one of the things that I've done oftentimes, if a place pays me too much money, is get it all in $1 bills. And I prayerfully write love on each one and pray that small things with great love would be done with each of those dollars. And then we have given an invitation at the end of my talk, which is basically saying, this money that I'm making doesn't belong to me, but it belongs to the poor. And just like the early church took the offerings and put it at the apostles' feet, we want to do that right now. And so we pour out those $1 bills, and we say, you're the apostles, you're the disciples of Jesus. Go into the world, find the poor, find those who are broken, who are hungry, who need some medication, you know, or whatever they need with that, and do small things with great love with it. So we invite people to come forward and to take a dollar just to make a commitment to be a part of that redistributive economy of Jesus.
How old are you now?
31.
I got married at 20, almost 24, another time when people got married earlier. This should be noted, that I tell young people when they're getting married, you should, at this stage of your life, just getting married, decide prayerfully what would be a reasonable lifestyle in terms of dollars. Are you going to live on a... Could you live on $30,000 a year? That's not an outlandish figure. $35,000 a year. Can you live on that? Can you have housing, clothes, entertainment? Can you do that on $35,000, even $40,000 a year? I'm not saying we don't prescribe what you should do, but you should decide what that should be. And once having decided that, don't ever move beyond it. Mm-hmm. That in reality, what you need to do is take consideration for inflation. You know, it'll go up every year a little bit in inflation. But for the most part, to maintain that same lifestyle. Then as your income increases, instead of getting sucked in to a more expensive lifestyle as your income increases, the bigger car, the bigger house, the more expensive clothes, instead of getting sucked up into this, to stay at that same lifestyle which you prayerfully decided in the early stages of your marriage was a reasonable lifestyle, a Christian lifestyle, a lifestyle that is not embarrassing as you stand before the Lord and judgment. This is a reasonable lifestyle. Then, in fact, what you need to do is say, and all the surplus money that I earn, I want you to make more. People always say, are you against earning a lot? Of course not. You know, I'm with John Wesley. It is the responsibility of the Christian to work as hard as he can, to make as much money as he can, to spend as little as he can, in order to give away all that he can. Maintain the lifestyle. As your income goes up, you have more and more resources to use responsibly to meet the needs of those around you who are poor and oppressed. Yeah. One of the things that led to the creation of our mission organization is simply this, that when I started making more and more money, I was with friends who were in pretty much the same bag, and we were saying, what should we do with the money? And the first inclination was, let's give it to the church. And we started thinking, church? They'll end up buying stained glass windows and new carpets and new organs. We don't want that. I mean, we're not going to go without good carpets and affluent accrements in order that the church building might get all dialed up. So that's how we started this thing, this mission organization that was primarily committed to using the resources that we had collectively to meet the needs of the poor and the oppressed. And people now, by the thousands, have joined us mm-hmm. because we do spend the money responsibly. And, you know, we have a work down in Haiti, and every time somebody says, we want to go and see your work in Haiti, and what they expect to see is a building. Mm-hmm. And there is no building. We have literacy centers. You say, how many of them? Well, right now I think they're working with about 25,000 adults every week. But they meet under trees, and they meet in people's homes, and they do. You don't need a big office with a, you know, you just, we have to worry, because sometimes we get the idea that when you go to the mission field that you adopt a simple lifestyle. Sadly, I think we have to be very responsible when we go to the mission field that we do not feel that we can get sucked into an affluent lifestyle on the mission field.
Yeah.
Some people go to the mission field and they're actually embarrassed when they see how the quote-unquote sacrificial missionaries are living down there. So it's very, very important that not only do we live sacrificially in this, and it's not sacrificial. Mm-hmm. To establish a good lifestyle is not sacrificial. That is responsible. And to use your surplus money to help the poor and to make sure that the money is invested in such a way that it's not being spent on luxuries mm-hmm. On the mission field.
Yeah. And I'm really encouraged by the amount of creativity I see within suburban folks, too. I just met a family that they said, we're trying to figure out what it means to love our neighbor as ourselves where we are, you know, in this suburban culture. And they said, so what we did was we committed for every biological child that we send to college, we create a scholarship for an at-risk youth in the city. And we get to know their family and we learn from each other, you know. And so there's that sense of, I've got a family that's bigger than my little nuclear family, you know. Just beautiful things that another congregation did. I've often challenged some of the mega congregations that are building their building projects to think about if you are going to do that for yourself, let's love our neighbor as ourselves. So let's match dollar for dollar every dollar we're putting into a capital fund. And I usually call it a Jubilee campaign. So we try to get Willow Creek to do this, right? Because we said with the $50 million building that you're building, you could provide water access for the entire country of El Salvador. You know, and what kind of ripples would that have through, you know, for the gospel, through the evangelical church, if congregations began to do projects like that. And there are tons of people that I've learned from that have capped off their incomes. Rich Mullins was one of those that I really respect, and he said, I'm going to live off of the average working class family's income, and, you know, about $20,000, and gave away the rest. And Rick Warren, someone said, are you saying it's a sin to make a lot of money? He said, no, I'm saying it's a sin to die rich.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same idea that we've got, if we are entrusted with this, give it away with open hands, you know, so that we can say with John Wesley, if I die with more than 10 pounds, may every person call me a liar and a thief.
Oh, wow.
You've been listening to one of the 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut, a conversation between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne. To learn how this powerful dialogue came to be, listen to episode number 3, The Saga of Simply Enough. The link is in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Our hope is that you will be so motivated by this series that you will want to share the message with others in your congregation or group. Order a copy of the DVD, Choose Justice, with his extensive discussion guide from the store at thesimpleway.org for only $10. It is also available from World Vision Canada and from Tony Campolo's online store. All those addresses are given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. See pictures of Alternative's crew in Philadelphia producing the original and links to the bonus video segments. Links are in the show notes at simpleLivingWorks.org, window number 3. To get better acquainted with Tony and Shane and their ministries, follow the links in the show notes. Each episode of Tony and Shane Uncut, including the podcast and the show notes, will be released to iTunes, Stitcher, and the other podcast directories about the 1st and the 15th of the month, May through August. However, if you want to hear more of the 3.5-hour dialogue, you can. Go to simpleLivingWorks.org, window number 3, click the episode index, scroll down to the backup section, click on the episode of your choice. Sorry, you can only download episodes into your iPod or smartphone, as each episode with its show notes is released to iTunes and Stitcher. Those instructions will be given in the show notes of each episode, so if you want to listen to one and then hear more, you can. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org. Leave a message on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. All those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click on window number 3. In addition to this podcast and its show notes, we produce new Simple Living Works blog several times a week. We hope you'll read it and subscribe. This blog is the companion to our 2 times a month podcast. The content is different, though the subject is the same. Click on blog at the top of the show notes for each episode. As one of our early and long-standing supporters of Alternatives, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, known as the ELCA, has pledged to keep a copy of each resource produced by Alternatives and to make copies available by request at a nominal cost. Feel free to contact them at the offices near Chicago. The complete contact information is given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. In the next episode, I present the next of 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Subscriptions are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Pinterest. Urge your friends to do the same. Provide your email address to receive our monthly Simple Living Works e-newsletter. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We do, of course, recommend and urge alternative giving. Thanks to John Pitney and the band Earth Mama for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Thanks also to World Vision Canada, who now owns the audio of Tony and Shane. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.